Welcome to Unstoppable, the conversation designed to fuel your success in real estate with insights from industry leaders and rising stars who embody the unstoppable mindset. Get inspired, take action, and accelerate your growth. Your hosts are joining you now.
Welcome back to Unstoppable. Today we are joined by Lisa Pennell, CEO of Barry Plant, a highly respected leader with deep experience across the real estate industry. Lisa, welcome. It's fabulous to have you with us.
Welcome,
Thank you,
Lisa.
Wonderful to be here.
So I got to meet you for the first time this year at the REB Awards when you had just walked off stage accepting the award for Major Network of the Year. Huge achievement. How did it feel?
Look, I think you can probably recall the look on my face. Surprised there hasn't been a meme made out of it, actually. Steer in the headlights is probably an understatement. It was a very big shock. I, you know, was absolutely thrilled that the group had been nominated as a finalist. But really didn't think we were in for the win. So it was overwhelming is probably the word.
There's some big names in that category. And I think that, I mean, I know we felt the same way that, you know, you don't take it for granted and it seems surprised because it's such a quality playing field. What is it that you think kind of set you apart to take home that win?
Oh, I think the Barry Plant brand itself, as you would know, is, you know, one of the iconic Melbourne brands. And I think, you know, it's no secret that obviously the brand having been number one, you know, back in its heyday is not number one at the moment. And I think, you know, it's pretty clear that we're going through an enormous transformation here. So in terms of our value offering, we've had a complete overhaul in, you know, in the tech, HR, finance, compliance, every aspect of our training, you know, everything's been completely reinvigorated over the last couple of years. So I can only put it down to that. This is our sort of final year in that 3-year plan. And this is all about activating on those, on that value offering, if you like, to ensure that we achieve the best possible growth.
Was that a challenge to come in and pick that up and completely reinvigorate everything?
Absolutely. I think it was a challenge for us and a challenge for our network as well, because, you know, that's an enormous amount of change in a very short space of time. But it was really critical that we got, you know, in not only to hygiene level on these aspects of business, but also, you know, get in front of that wave, if you like. Our CTO said early in the piece, you know, we don't want to just be watching from the beach. We want to be riding the wave. And I think now we're riding that wave on every front.
Do you have any advice around that change management? Because I find that, I mean, typically, particularly at, you know, agency level, generally most business owners are either still currently sales agents themselves or have been sales agents. And so by their nature, you know, they're full of fabulous ideas and we all want everything now. I don't think patience is anybody's strong suit in this game. And so change management is not often a well thought out piece. It's about, right, we want this, let's just do it. If we just hustle, we can do it. But that usually invariably leads to other challenges and an ineffective change. Do you have any advice around that?
I think I've been fortunate in that I'm not a real estate agent. I have a corporate background and have always, well, you know, since I've been in the real estate industry, I've always been in franchising as opposed to at office level. And so I think, you know, change management is part of, you know, my expertise, if you like, not necessarily listing and selling houses. My advice, I guess, for anyone going through a change management program is patience and to understand the adoption curve. You know, and again, that's a lot of people in our industry may not understand. The science shows that there are different categories of people that will operate at different speeds in a change management program. And you can't expect that everyone's going to be an innovator or an early adopter, because you absolutely will have the late majority, the laggards who will only come kicking and screaming. And that's not a personal reflection. That's actually just the way that it is. People are different. People have different appetites for change. And change is hard even for those of us who thrive on change. It still provides challenges, right? So patience, empathy, and, you know, get ready that some people will dislike the change and perhaps you personally for being the instrument of change. And, you know, it's really important not to take that personally.
Lisa, you've worked in some really high performance environments, as you just mentioned. What qualities do you think really separates a good leader from a great one?
That's a great question. I think humility. And I think the ego risk is the biggest danger for any leader. And I mean any leader, because we're all human and we all are, you know, on the ladder of life. We go up and we might take a step down before we go back up again. The risk of ego, you know, for any leader is sitting there right on the shoulder. Is this power mine or is it the role's power? And it's really important not to get caught up in that. Great leaders don't have, are not caught in the ego trap. I'd make it as simple as that.
Sure. What is it that gives you that anchor when you are, you know, we're in a high pressure environment, you know, you're obviously responsible for an entire brand. That's, you know, that's got a lot of, you know, sort of pressure, high stakes, all that sort of stuff. How do you keep yourself anchored when you're going through that day-to-day leadership?
I think it's got a lot to do with the relationships that you build around you, both personally and professionally. My team have full permission and actually are, you know, are encouraged to tell me if at any point, you know, that anything did go to my head, and I would want that, because for me that would be the road to destruction. And likewise, my family and friends keep me very real. I have a great support network. But again, this is all about the connectivity of human beings. You know, when you're living in an ego world, you're quite isolated from that. If you're connected to people and in a more authentic and empathetic way, the ego risk is much less, and therefore the stress is much less, because you know you're not. Yes, I'm responsible for what happens in this group, but like I'm one woman. You know, it's always a we. I always say, you know, recently I've been saying with my team, we're one head, many many legs, and that doesn't mean my head. That means we have a shared intelligence, if you like, and we're all activating to that intelligence. So trying to move harmoniously as a group, where, you know, my role is different. It's not more important than my marketing coordinator, for example. If she drops the ball and isn't answering tickets, that's a big problem, you know, and it's all relative. So, you know, we're just having different functions in this business, not more important or less important.
Difficult conversations, they're never easy. I'm really curious to sort of hear the feedback that I suppose giving tough feedback while still giving that connection that you just mentioned and respect with your team. How do you master that? Do you do that?
That's some great questions, ladies.
we're throwing them short, sharp.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. I think first find the common ground would be what I would suggest. You know, find where you can connect with a shared vision with that person. Right. Once you've connected on agreeing what the shared vision is, you then have the opportunity to show where the gap is between where you both want to be and where you are right now. And again, we all have this problem where we don't necessarily see the impact of our actions. We only know what we intended. So how many times have we upset someone and said, I didn't mean to upset you. That's a difference between impact and intention. And so when you kindly show someone the gap between where they want to be, where we want you to be, or where we want the business to be, or whatever the shared goal is, and where we are right now, it's much easier for that to be a side-by-side conversation rather than a hostile conversation. Once we have that understanding and agreement of where the gap is, then we can make a plan about how to close that gap. And again, you know, the less we can personally trigger people, because you've got to remember, if you don't mind me going a little bit far into this, we're really just bags of meat.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, who we are, you know, our intelligence is so much more than the bodies that sit in front of us. And we're a product of our environment, all of the scars, all of the traumas, blah, blah, blah. So if we're going to have conversations where people are going to feel triggered or criticized or bad as humans because they didn't get it 100% right, you're never going to get the best outcome. We've got to have empathy for the fact that we don't know what we don't know. I don't know what I don't know. I'm, you know, and I'm certainly not perfect in any of this. You know, every day is a learning for me too. Hopefully that makes sense.
It does. I think what it sounds to me like you've created a really psychologically safe
yes
team environment. And some people get very, I'm going to use the word triggered by the phrase psychological safety. Which really, it just means an environment where people can come and speak openly, come and say, hey, Lisa, I just made this huge stuff up. Can you help me fix it? Knowing that they're not going to be screamed at or, you know, thrown under the bus, that they're actually going to constructively be assisted in not making that mistake again.
And inspired to, you know. The old school way is to frighten people. You know, I remember a previous leader of mine, and those who've worked under him will know this saying, everyone needs a hair shirt. Now, his theory back in the day was the hair shirt is the thing that irritates you and is making you angry or upset, and that actually creates more of a performance. You know, then antagonism between two officers that are in the same brand will make both officers perform better. Now, that does work, but it's painful and it has a limited lifespan. The new world, and again, we've got to recognize where the world and where leadership has changed, is if you don't provide psychological safety, there's no psychological safety in the world. You know, we've gone from a world 30 years ago where, you know, if you went home, you actually were home. You didn't have one of these. You know, you did have downtime. Yeah. You took 3 or 4 weeks holidays. You actually switched off. You know, all of that stress you got out of your body. Now, we don't have that anymore. So if we're at work stressed all the time and then we go home and we've still got all these inputs because there's no processing time, then we actually, that's when we get sick.
Yeah.
So psychological safety is not optional anymore in a workplace if you want a sustainable business. If you want a high-performing team, you need people to feel safe. Otherwise, you will simply not get the best out of them, in my personal opinion.
I agree. The days of the carrot and the stick, I think, are done. And, you know, it might work for a select few, but isn't it better to help people go further and faster on their own rather than having to crack a whip to get them there?
Well, I don't count hours with my team, you know, and I don't know where they are all the time, and I don't know, you know, exactly what time they start or what time they finish or if they're picking up a child, and I don't want to. I'm more interested in the outcomes, but I will tell you that this team here in the franchisor is, you know, one of the hardest working high-performing teams I've ever had the pleasure of running. So, you know, again, for me, that is the right algorithm moving forward.
Which is probably a good segue. Looking at the industry now, what kind of leadership do you think it's crying out for, and who's doing it really well other than your network?
Do you mean at office level or network level?
Both. I'm curious to hear your mind with both areas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to name names because then I'll, you know, leave people out by mistake and offend people. But I think there are certainly good leaders at office level, at agency level. I think that is a real opportunity in our industry. I think there is probably more people that are not great leaders and have opportunities to be better leaders than there are great leaders at office level. I think similarly in our corporate environment in franchisor land, I think there's plenty of leaders who have either a natural flair for it or, you know, have gone through professional development and personal development to become good leaders. But if I'm going to be honest, I think it's one of the things that really holds our industry back more than anything is this, it's not a broad scale, there's great leaders everywhere. I think it is a problem in our industry.
I agree. And I think that part of that challenge stems from that we all focus on being agents first, and it takes a really long time and a lot of trial and error before realizing, actually, I also need to be a great leader. But sometimes we're so far down the road that we're not willing to make that change or investment in the personal development, like you just spoke about, with the leadership stuff, whether it's just going to a leadership conference, whether it's a full-blown course, whatever it might be, reading books, you know, anything that helps develop you as a leader. And it's one of those things that, I mean, I know that when I've had new franchisees join us, I had one join us recently, and I said to him, okay, what's the goal? The first 12 months, and it was a certain amount of transactions, a certain amount of market share, all that sort of stuff. But the very first thing he actually said as a first-time business owner was, at the end of 1 year, I want to be a real estate leader. And it was one of the few people in recent times that have actually identified that that's something he wants to work on in the first 12 months.
And wow.
Wow, if only more people were like that, what a better industry we would have. So it's interesting that it doesn't matter what state you're in, doesn't matter what marketplace you're in, there is leadership is one of those things that I think the industry is crying out for, which probably a good, an interesting way to lead into this question, this next question I have for you, which is, what is the industry, or what is the conversation that industry needs to be having that it's not?
Oh, another great question. Oh, look, I think there's a few areas that are probably really topical. The big one for me is the fact that, you know, mistrust for me is caused by our industry, mistrust with the end customer, and it's because of how we interact with each other, how we how we talk about each other with consumers. You know, it starts at the appraisal table when, you know, it's not uncommon, as you know, for agents to bag their competitors and criticise their competitors and spread lies about their competitors to get the listing. You know, that's where it begins, where the vendor is, you know, susceptible to being told the highest price and therefore the agent lies about the appraisal, you know, level, or, you know, inflates that to in order to get the listing. Again, all of these activities are not, when we gamify it, when we consider our customer like a mark, you know, that road is troublesome. And I think that is happening. I think even if you look at some of the broad scale training that's happening, it's very much around the scripts and dialogues as opposed to, well, how do I connect with this human? How do I, you know, how do I make the journey as stress-free as possible for this customer whilst getting the best outcome? It seems like the focus is more on how do I close the deal? How do I condition the vendor? How do I, you know, how do I inspire more competition? And again, those things are all important, but it's the spirit with which they're done. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It does start from the very beginning. Lisa, if you just had one piece of advice to someone that is really taking the plunge and stepping into it, their first leadership role, good luck to them. What would that be? And what would you say to them? Like, how would you change things? And perhaps looking at your success and what you've been able to achieve along the way, how would you have done anything slightly different or tweaked along the way?
Oh, I don't think I'd do anything different, because I honestly believe that we make the best decisions that we can with the information that we have available. I don't see any point in looking back with regret. But what I would say, the most important thing in my journey, at least, and that's far from it over, I feel I, you know, learn new things every day, is that impact versus intention. So forget about what you meant to achieve and look at what actually happened. So if the outcome was bad, it's very easy to finger point and go, well, that person was a horrible person, or it's their fault, or, you know, whatever. And there will be elements to the other person's conduct. I'm not saying that, you know, you should blame yourself for everything that goes wrong in the world. That's equally, you know, a problem on the other extreme. But I would say look at the impact and consider your part in it, and consider how you potentially could have made better decisions, or how you might inform your actions or your decision-making going forward. And I'll also add that, you know, learning inside your own head is hard. Go outside, you know, connect with other leaders, talk to other leaders, you know, go and do, get a coach, get some professional development, because it's the only way that we really can learn is if we have those external mirrors.
When you look back over your career, do you have a particular moment in time where you thought, I'm a leader now?
Oh, yeah, many. And probably more like different intonation, Jackie. I'm a leader now. I remember my very first leadership. So I did start life as an accountant, but I had a very strong passion for music as well. And I really didn't believe deep down, I guess I didn't see myself in that, you know, that I was going to be good in that space. And I remember I was working in a mobile phone shop, and I got offered the role of store manager, and I was actually, and it's probably been something, those moments have happened frequently through my career where I step back and go, oh, really? But do you think I could do that? Okay, I'll give it a go. So I think they're probably the moments that stick out for me more along the journey, is the other people seeing things in me that maybe I didn't see in myself. And I keep repeating this. I actually was just on the phone to Lee Woodward before. We've got him running a leadership program with our directors this year. And he said this line a couple of months ago, which is, you can't read the label from inside the jar.
Oh.
And I think I can't. It's like the biggest epiphany of the year, right? And I think that's I like to live with curiosity. And, you know, that those moments are very memorable.
Yeah,
they're very humble.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I love that saying.
You can't read the label from inside the jar.
I'm curious to know what life looks like for you when it's your downtime. How do you switch off, and how do you manage to separate the two worlds? Because you definitely, you lead a very intense, I'm sure, pressure Monday to Friday, probably. Not a 9-to-5 job?
No, yeah.
What does life look like for you to switch off?
Yeah, the basics are, you know, critical when you're in a high-pressure role or high-input role, I would say. you know, it's important to go to the gym, it's important to try and eat well, it's important to try and get sleep, you know, increasingly as you get older. How do I switch off? You know, probably anything that takes me into the present. So gardening, I love. Gardening is a great thing. I'm a big meditator. I meditate twice a day. I am a singer still, so I still perform every so often. I come up to Sydney to do that. So every couple of months I still...
You have to let us know. We want to come and watch you sing.
I try not to blend the two worlds, but sure. I think whatever it is, people have all sorts of different ways to get into the present moment. But for me, that's even during the day, it's really important to stay present as much as possible, because the biggest enemy is the thing between these two things. And, you know, I was actually just talking to my events manager earlier about how, you know, that 2 a.m. thing, the mind has a wonderful way of taking you into the negative. You know, always, you know, that if you let it go, it's a monkey that will always go to the place where you're afraid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, because we all experience it. We don't talk about it, but that's what happens. It happens to me too. It happens to everybody. And the only way to escape it is to be present right now, right here, not in the future, not in the past, but here.
So before we wrap up, I'd love to know, what is next?
I don't know. Another meeting? No, I don't know. I mean, I try to live in the present as much as possible, because we don't know what tomorrow brings. But I'm really, you know, I've still got a lot of work to do here that I'm excited about, and a lot of great business owners have great opportunities to level up their businesses, and new business owners coming to join us. So this year, as I say, is all about growth for us. So lots of fun times ahead.
Sounds like it's going to be a huge 12 months for Barry Plant.
Hope so.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Lisa. We really appreciate all of your insights. And until next time.
A pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa. For having me. Thank you for
Bye.
Your time.
Bye.
Thank you.